I would say we are have been great at adopting technology. We've been throwing tech at stuff. We've been digitizing a lot of our processes and businesses around there. We have a great dependency on it, but security maybe didn't follow all the time when it comes to building it right, making sure that we have resources to maintain it. So I think that's the biggest challenge. I mean, now we're getting tools to actually show the gaps we're having, misconfigurations and patching that is never happening, lifecycle management that is never happening. So from if we look from a threat perspective, I think vulnerabilities and hardening is where we see the biggest gaps in companies and organizations. Security podcast, and MVP fight to the last. Inside and know how we take the challenge now.
Welcome back to Talking Security, your go-to podcast for all things related cybersecurity. My name is Frans Oudendorp, and together with Pujan Gebasi, we're hosting this podcast. We're excited to bring you another episode of Season 2 in our MVP Security Insights series, where we connect with the experts and MVPs who are shaping the future of cybersecurity every day. Pujan.
Yes, Frans. And today we have a fantastic guest joining us, Stefan Schorling, CTO at OnePrint, a long time Microsoft Security MVP. We needed to look it up, but it is 17 years. I think the longest MVP that we have on the show. Sun certified professional and an all-round security geek, if we can say it like that. With over 25 years in the field, Stephen has seen the evolution of cybersecurity from its earliest day to the cloud-driven, threat intelligence-powered era we live in today. As a trusted advisor and leader in managed security services, he helps organizations navigate the complex world of Defender XDR, USX, threat intelligence, and incident response.
So grab your headphones, settle in, and get ready for a deep dive, a fun conversation on the future of security monitoring, real-world response strategies, and staying ahead of the curve in a fast-moving world. Let's talk security. So welcome, Stefan.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to be here. I mean, time flies. 25 years. Wow.
Yeah, it's a long time. So we will dive into to that kind of topics a little bit in the next, what should we say, 30 minutes, 45 minutes maybe. So before we start, Can you tell us a bit about yourself, who you are, what was your journey in the past years, so to say?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Stefan Schorling. I live in Sweden. I've been doing consulting for the last 10 years, more or less. Otherwise, I did in-house IT, and I was also a consultant at Capgemini, as an example. But I've been mainly focused on security. That's kind of where my core was coming from. I started in the 90s hanging around on IRC channels, getting to know stuff in my early or late teens, I would say. So that's kind of where it started. I got an interest for IT in the 90s, and let's do this. And security, I studied a security in school, and it was more physical security focus, but it was security. And then we had a lecturer from the University of Gothenburg who did cyber security lessons for us, and that really got me. Oh, this sounds cool. And that's kind of how it started. And then I started working as a security guard, and then what should I do? Maybe I should do the military service, but then the Swedish defense turned everything down, so my service was cancelled. So then I found this private company where we're doing trainee stuff, and then I got hired there after 6 weeks because I built their intranet, and then I kind of started there, and that's kind of how it started, working with Nivelle and Cisco and Linux and migrating from Novell NDS to Active Directory on NT, not on NT, it was on Windows 2000 Beta 4. So, but yeah, so I've been doing a bit of everything. So I'm very broad stuff. And then, yeah, security has always been close to my heart. And yeah, a lot of stuff happening in the area.
Yeah, definitely. And I know a lot of people working in security nowadays have a background in monitoring. They're doing stuff with SCOM and System Center Operations Manager and so on and so on. Is there also a piece of technology that you have been using in the past years?
I mean, I did a lot of System Center. I started a System Center user group many, many years ago, and that's kind of when I became an MVP back in 2008 as well. So I did a lot of management in the Microsoft space as well, but I always had this security thing with me. So let's build a secure client, not only a client, it needs to be secure. I think I did my first pen testing course back in 2001 or something. So it's, yeah. It's always been there, but yeah, it's ups and downs. You follow the trends on things. I mean, I started with Linux, Windows, and Solaris, Checkpoint firewalls, and so on. And then I like the CLI. And
yeah,
but I mean, I've been doing a lot of stuff for sure. System Center has definitely been there. But when it comes to monitoring, I did a lot of the other tools. When it comes to SolarWinds and those back in, yeah, 20 years ago or something.
That's, yeah, and nowadays you're the CTO of OneFin, a big cybersecurity company in Sweden, also MSSP. What is your primary area of expertise, and how did your passion for threat intel, incident response, and Defender XDR grow over time in the last year, so to say?
I mean, technology has always been core to my heart. I like to learn new stuff. I like to challenge technology. I like to see the it come to use for both end users and companies. And unfortunately, the threat area have definitely changed over the last 10 years, where we've seen the ramp up of ransomware. We're seeing a lot of more business email compromise. Companies are being more attacked because, I mean, well, we all know that this is like the third largest economy in the world now, cyber criminality. So yeah, we see the need. The customers get hit every week, and we try to do our best to help them. And of course, that kind of gets us into those areas as well, with threat intelligence, sharing information, being communities of what's actually going on, being better prepared. Then unfortunately, I mean, incident response is, yeah, I wish we wouldn't need it, but unfortunately companies get hit, and then we need to help them in the best way to get back on track as soon as possible to find the threat actor and evict them, and then get them back on track with recovery. So, I mean, I've always been interested in security, and it's kind of, we have in Sweden, we have this military defense agency called FRA, which is radio surveillance of the SIGINT. So, and some of my friends called me like SIGINT Stefan, because I like to keep a track of the threat landscape and everything that's going on. So I've always been interested in that area and making sure that I always have the latest intel and details to make the right decision. So, I mean, not only from a threat perspective, I like to stay updated, and that kind of goes hand in hand with threat intel as well, making sure make the right decisions, have the right protections in place, and the right means to better be protected. Yeah. From an MSSP perspective, I mean, all companies have a need for 24/7 monitoring, and I mean, we are doing that, and it's okay. Yeah, we saw a huge need in the market, and we're doing what we can with our expertise to help companies in the area. So that is definitely something we're seeing. We were seeing also the market maturing from being more a switchboard, where we maybe did monitoring and then handed it back to the customer. Okay, dear customer, now you need to do this. Instead, we can take response, and all businesses take response. I mean, we've seen a maturity in the technology landscape, but also in the services from different cybersecurity vendors out there. So that's also great, because you need to be able to respond quickly today. When things happen, it goes so quickly. And also things we're seeing in Defender with attack disruption technology kicking in. We had an incident the other week where attack disruption just kicked in 6 minutes after the incident occurred and kicked out the threat actor. So it's definitely out there. And technology can help, but we also need manual eyes on the problem or the challenges.
Yeah, Stefan, you talked a lot on the threat actor side. I think that's getting a lot of focus also from the community and Microsoft as well, definitely when it comes to the attack disruption. And if you focus currently, are those also projects that you are working on? So if you focus, if it is company-wide or community-driven, projects, what kind of initiatives are there that you are leading at the moment?
So I do a bit of everything, but I mean, I like to, I usually act as a trusted advisor to customers. So reviewing what their posture is, how mature they are in certain areas, and trying to build a roadmap, trying to build a 1, 2, or 5 year roadmap to be the customers. That's usually what I do now. Finding to assess what capabilities do you have, where do you want to be in 5 years, and we try to prioritize the roadmap together. So right now it's a lot about it's been a lot for the past few years, it's been a lot about getting the XDR capabilities out there, getting the detect and protect, detect and respond capabilities, and now we're moving more into refining processes with improving custom detections, adding more detection capabilities, mapping that to MITRE. And we're also seeing more and more maturity coming into threat intelligence. We need to be more advised. We need to be quicker. How are we sharing with different communities? So that is something that is increasing right now. The challenge I see with threat intelligence at the moment is not all companies have the budget for it. Because threat intelligence, if you're going to buy large feeds, more capabilities in there, it costs quite a lot of money, and not everyone is ready for that yet. But if we take the finance sector or defense sector, they are more mature in those areas. So we're seeing a lot of that. We're seeing more and more maturity in the business or the market also procuring incident response retainers. We're seeing more and more procurement of MDR as a service, or someone who wants to have that capability. It's still a lot of companies who doesn't have those capabilities, and we're actually seeing it going down to the more small mid-market as well, so not only enterprises. So that is a lot of what I'm doing right now, with advising, helping strategic decisions in those areas. And then internally, I of course support all our technology initiatives in the different teams we have as a CTO. So overlooking, making sure that we are in the right direction, making the right investments, prioritizing the right things, and also listening to what customers are after. So that is kind of what fills my days at the moment. And then, of course, keeping updated and learning stuff on the threat intel side. So it's an ever-evolving market.
Sounds as a very empty agenda that you have.
Yeah, well, I like to work a lot, and I like to, it's part of the sharing with community and being out there presenting. I mean, it takes a lot of effort, but it also gives you so much back. I have a very supportive family, so that's
nice. Well, and you mentioned regarding advising the customers and organize your own or company towards the future with technologies. And looking at the Microsoft technologies available at the moment, the whole stack, like Defender XDR, Unified Security, which one of those do you prioritize or advise for now, or maybe even for customers to prepare themselves for the coming period to adopt that technology?
Mm-hmm. If I take Sweden as a market, we are fairly mature when it comes to the XDR market. We have a huge adoption rate already. So where companies are now is that, okay, we need to refine, improve what's actually out there, because it's been rolled out everyone has Defender or an EDR at least, more or less. It now it comes more to those who have maybe diverse security landscape still to actually put that together. So we're seeing more and more adoption of that where you don't have a XDR strategy. But tooling wise, it's out there. What we're seeing more and more now is how can we orchestrate? How can we automate? How can we improve our efficiency? Because that is usually a challenge. You get these all these nice tools and then you have bells and whistles and what are we going to do with it? And we're seeing an interest in what AI can do in that area. And that's kind of a hot topic right now. A lot of companies started to look into Security Copilot and maybe had an impression, okay, this is going to solve everything. But yeah, it's supporting you. But what we're seeing now with AI agent, that's really what I think a lot of companies anticipated when that came out, that you actually have an agent supporting you, taking actions, advising you. So I think agents is definitely what we're going to see a lot of in the next 12 to 18 months. So that is what I'm seeing right now coming true, both advising from improving your posture, but also triaging. And I mean, a lot of companies would agree with me saying that email is the largest volume of incidents or alerts out there for all companies. So that is something they're struggling with keeping up. So hopefully AI and AI agents can support in that area. And we saw Microsoft released an AI agent recently here as well, which looks promising, and then we'll just see what the community can do around it as well, and everyone's wrapping their head around it and building great stuff when you have the plumbing at least to work with. So
yeah, I think they presented it at the Secure event as well, right? How the email agent was just swiping through all the incidents without anybody looking at it. It was pretty impressive to if we can achieve that at a certain
yeah we'll moment. See the outcomes later. how spot on it is. Of course it's going to need training, but that's what we need. I mean, we can't just throw hours and resources on top of volumes, because that is kind of not feasible. No one can afford tons of people, and there's not tons of people out there available either. So that's
Yeah, I think that's still the problem. The human power that we need for that kind of tasks. Yeah, if we can automate that with an agent like that, I think that's really really helpful. Talking about maturity, Sweden really really mature, and I think we're in the Netherlands and the Nordics is and in general are really mature when it comes to technology. When looking at the industries and the things and the companies where you work with, what are the biggest cybersecurity challenges today in the area where we live, in your opinion?
I would say we have been great at adopting technology. We've been throwing tech at stuff. We've been digitizing a lot of our processes and businesses around there. We have a great dependency on it, but security maybe didn't follow all the time when it comes to building it right, making sure that we have resources to maintain it. So I think that's the biggest challenge. I mean, now we're getting tools to actually show the gaps we're having, misconfigurations and patching that is never happening, lifecycle management that is never happening. So if we look from a threat perspective, I think vulnerabilities and hardening is where we see the biggest gaps in companies and organizations, because that is tough to configure things properly, because yeah, it's in there in the docs, but it doesn't really, it's sometimes you have done next, and that's not the way to do it always. So that is what we're seeing a lot. And then we're seeing a lot about mergers and acquisitions, companies being acquired. And then that is tough to integrate quickly. And then sometimes you take shortcuts, and that leaves you exposed in some for some time, and maybe for too long time as well. So I would say those are kind of the biggest challenges I'm seeing with our customers and the market in general. Of course, it differs per segment. Some, the private sector and some of the sectors with more money, of course, they are better well-versed. And then we have some other businesses who doesn't have as much as money, then it's worse. And the public sector is the one who's struggling the most, I would say, when it comes to posture and so on, because they have still been struggling a bit about using the old egg security strategy with a good, really good firewall, and then that's what you got.
Yeah.
So, but we're seeing that changing as well, of course. But I mean, it takes time to transform. So.
Yeah, but needing a firewall, that was the only thing we needed back in the days, isn't it?
Exactly, an AV and firewall, then we're good.
Yeah. When you talk about, you're mentioning public sector as one of the areas that can a bit of improve, so to say. Are there specific regulatory things that are impacting, for example, the public sector as well in Sweden? Or is that more in general?
No, there hasn't really been much. GDPR did a few things, but that was more paper products, I would say. Now we're seeing the NIS director, NIS2 director from European Union that is starting to pick up, and an organization needs to adhere to. So that's going to bring a lot of attention in those areas. But there are still some uncertainty who are being affected, which areas should be effective, and not all organizations have really taken that up. But that is definitely going to control that sector a bit more, and more investment needs to be made. In general, it is tough. It's tax funded, and you don't always get as much money as you need. And some of the municipalities are very small, so it's kind of tough to maintain a good posture if you're only two in IT, or to maintain a whole municipality and so on. So I think there are, of course, challenges. We're seeing that being addressed in various ways, where municipalities go together, you collaborate across the municipalities and borders and so on. So definitely things happening and improving in the area, but it's usually takes time, and slow movers, or what to say in that area from a perspective, but it's getting better for sure. So I mean, we saw it wasn't a cyber attack, but I mean, Spain had some issues the other day with some electricity, and I mean, yeah, society is very vulnerable from time to time in certain areas. If it's water or electricity or what it is, it's we're quite dependent on it. So
we had that in the Netherlands in the last few days as well. Websites DDoSing on municipalities because of the support for Ukraine, where some pro-Russian hacker groups are attacking our public sector, but in general the websites DDoSing. I think cybersecurity within the public sector, with all these kind of things happening in the world, are becoming more and more, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure.
And we are having NAVO, of course, in June in the Hague. That's going to be there are a lot of papers from the NCSS published as well in the Netherlands. That's the National Cyber Coordination Center, regarding the regulation, how to do and how to act, for example. So those are also really interesting. And focusing from regulations to some geeky stuff, Stefan. As we said in the beginning, you're a self-described security geek. If you would, can you share with us an example of a recent security innovation or strategy you have implemented that had a significant impact? We talked about a couple that you have on the roadmap for the customers, but what was, for example, one of the latest implementations or designs you did that had a huge impact in your opinion?
I am fairly involved in our for the nation, where I actually do threat briefings for our municipalities and regions. So I do that on a nationwide. So I'm supporting one of the national organizations to actually do threat briefings. So that, I think that is kind of an high impact thing, where I have the possibility to share my what I'm seeing, and hopefully can make Sweden better protected. So I think that is kind of something I'm really passionate about, sharing and caring. I mean, I've always been into community. Now I have the opportunity to do that for all the municipalities and regions in Sweden, where they actually can take actionable insights and do something with it to be better protect Sweden. So I think that is, I wouldn't say nationalistic, but I think it's in the times we are now, we need to do everything we can to defend Europe from all actors we're seeing. So everything I can do to have an impact on where I'm doing it right now, which is Sweden. So I think that is kind of a big impact right now. I definitely like and honor and do my best to actually give some value to everyone out there who's who's listening to those threat briefings. So.
Yeah, well, that's pretty impressive to be able to share that indeed to support
Sweden. I mean, it's impacting 10 million people, so
it's, it's not nothing.
No. So that is, something I'm very passionate about and I'm really happy to do. I'm actually doing one in a week, next week, Wednesday, it's time again. So.
Yeah, I think we have that kind of initiatives in the Netherlands as well. I'm not sure in how far commercial companies are involved with that. I think it's mostly government driven at the moment. But I think
this is government driven as well. But I'm hired by the government to do it for the one of the organizations. So.
Yeah, and I think to be honest, listening to you, I think it can have a huge impact, bringing like the commercial world into that, because we have maybe different experience where they are looking a much higher level to certain threats. We are seeing what's happening in the everyday life, for example.
Definitely.
If we took look at the we talked about it also a little bit regarding the incident response, and when it comes to the balance between the need for rapid reaction, you also mentioned attack disruption, where it responded in 6 minutes, for example, and the need for thorough automated defense mechanism. How do you think the balance should be? Because we also know the disadvantages can be there as well. What's your look on that?
I mean, there's always a challenge. I mean, we're seeing a lot of other commercial vendors outside of Microsoft doing, okay, we can auto-harden your environment based on telemetry and data we're seeing. And it sounds really good. I'm a bit hesitant because if we look what the threat actors are doing, if I can't harden my 100% of my environment, the threat actors, if they're in, they're probably going to find those 5-7% anyway to go around it. Of course, the vector is being smaller, but if it's an advanced threat actor, they're probably going to go around it as well. And I think there's a challenge with it as well, that it can actually give you kind of false, okay, now it's going to take care of it for me, and now I can just lean back and relax. But on the other hand, it can do really good stuff and decrease the attack vector. It can harden and it can like fix stuff. I'm not sure how that's going to fly from a, because I'm productivity perspective. Are we breaking things? Are we going to cause disruption instead of production? So I'm a bit hesitant around the area. I think it's an interesting area. I'm definitely eager to see what it's going to bring from the different vendors. hardening needs to be done, but it also needs to be done in the right way, so we actually can stay that we're sure of what we did. So we'll see. I'm a bit 50-50. I see the good stuff and I see the bad stuff, so we'll see. Time will tell us, but it's an exciting technology shift for sure. So we'll see.
Talking about new stuff, automatic attack disruption and that kind of stuff, you've seen a lot in the past decade, so to say. If we look to the future, what kind of trends do you see? We talked already on AI, on agents, on other stuff, but regarding incident response with automatic attack disruption, with threat intel and managed security services, what trends do we see?
I would say we're seeing we're pretty good at defending our office infrastructure, our enterprise IT, but then we're talking about factories, we're talking about supply chain, where we have everything digitized from order to like shipping. We're probably going to see more disruptions in those chains and more attacks against production environments and facilities as we are getting better protecting the normal standard IT office infrastructure. And that is an area where we're seeing a lot of old applications, homegrown stuff. We have old OT protocols and all of that. So that is definitely something we're going to see more attacks against. And companies are investing in the area, but it's not rapid enough because right now you're struggling with the office IT to get that up to par, and then next step would take that into par. So probably threat actors is going to be one step ahead as again.
Yeah.
And then we'll see more in that area. From a geopolitical perspective, I'm not sure what we're going to see from a cloud perspective. I mean, we're getting more protective nation by nation. I'm not sure. The problem is we don't have many options. We are kind of bound to the large vendors, and the alternatives are not as good enough. So we'll just probably going to need to find a way how to do it with hybrid infrastructure, because that's going to force us to be updated. Because if we're going to stick on prem, we're going to be in that lousy state we were in 10 years ago again. So,
and I think at the geopolitical discussion with cloud providers, not in Europe, so to say, that's also a discussion here in the Netherlands. On the other hand, the things are happening on the other side of the world, within Ukraine, with the war going on, investing in OT. That needs to be done. We already mentioning Spain in the last few days out of power. That's probably not a cyber attack, but it could be happen that it's a cyber attack, and then stuff can happen. And I saw in the news in the last few days, 5 people were dead because of the power outage. And if that's gonna happen, then it can have real impact on people's lives. I think we need to be aware of that we are in that kind of area. So a lot of things happen on different pieces, and that's the challenge for the next days, months, years, I guess. Yeah.
Technology-wise, we're gonna definitely see changes there in the OT space. We're also going to see a lot of more maturity in the information security perspective. I mean, if you go to any organization out there and ask almost any of the employees what information classification is this information, probably no one's going to, is it company confidential, or is it secret, or is it public? I mean, we're going to see a lot more maturity in information security and risk management. So that's definitely an area where we are pretty unmature. I mean, we are great at adopting technology, but all this soft stuff around it, that's something we're going to see increase as well the coming years, I would say, because we need to get it out to the business, and the end users needs to be responsible for awareness, not clicking on those links, etc. No matter how good technology we have, people are people. There's always going to be scams out there. So,
yeah. Talking about people, I think last question before we move into the AI question, the stand-up piece of this episode. If I am new as a security professional in this, so to say, fast-changing landscape, with Defender, XDR, all the things happening there. What advice would you want to give to people starting in the area where we're working in today?
Find a mentor, I would say. That is someone who you can, ChatGPT and all GPTs are, they are great, but sometimes they're not that great. Find a mentor who can guide you. Find someone who can give you insights on what you should focus on. Of course, if you're born in the cloud and you're going to work with on-prem stuff, it's going to be a challenge. Me working 25 years with that on-prem stuff, sure, things are by a given, but it's if you're born in the cloud, there are things that, oh, what is this? What's a DHCP server? I usually just get my AP and it's working. There are some basic stuff that is kind of good to know, and find a mentor, someone who can guide you and ask you and show you in the direction, who's been playing in the game. So I would say find a mentor, work with that person, have them coach you, and to make use of all the technology you can do. Of course, with all the GPTs and stuff, it's great for accelerated learning, definitely, but you need to have sanity as well, so bring in a mentor. So that is something we actually have at our work. When you start at OneWin, you get the mentor within the company who knows OneWin and other stuff. So that is and I'm also doing mentoring for the community. There have been community members who have been wanting to have mentoring, and then I do that on my spare time. So that's advice I can give anyone. So find a mentor. So
yeah, and who wants to be a mentor for you, and who is a good mentor for you, is also a bit of interest. What kind of interest do you have, and find someone that's close to your interest. I think that's also good to mention, because if it's completely different, you can learn a lot, but probably you will walk away after a few weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there needs to be that connection as well, for sure.
Yeah. Bouyan, what kind of AI question did you generate for Stefan? Because you collected a bunch of stuff from Stefan in the past few days, and you throw that in, what is it, one of the agents, the AI agents, and then we get the AI question.
Yeah, I think we did. And looking to the experience of Stefan's having in the field for the so many years, even AI was agreeing on that. So the question is, Stefan, with 25 years in cybersecurity, you have seen the industry grow from the early days of firewalls, what we mentioned before, to today's world of Defender XDR, USX, advanced threats, etc., etc. If you could jump back in time and give your younger security geek self one tip about incident response or threat detection, what would it be, and would it still apply today?
let's take... firewalls are still around. They've been there forever. They are kind of... they're disqualified. So. but if we say incident response, I think crisis management is something that is kind of also been the same, but what I've learned over the years is that crisis management is not only about technology. It's a lot about humans and people, processes and people. So if I knew that 25 years ago, yeah, sure, I would have done things a bit differently. It's not only about tech. You actually need to handle the people, the communication, and so on. So that is kind of a learning that's come for the later years, something I would wish I could have taken with me earlier. 25 years ago in the threat intel space, it did not really exist. Maybe it was more on a defense level and we have some SIGINTs in the defense and so on. Commercially, that was not the thing. Sure, we had IPS and all those IDSs and all of that and things, but strategic and operational was not that big from a commercial perspective. So, but yeah, firewalls are still applying. Make sure that you block what should be blocked. So that is my kind of block anything. Always verify. That's for sure something I would still apply. It's a tough question, but
Every talking about tough questions, but so let's continuing this episode with some community and collaboration and some personal insights. So Puyan, what do we have next?
Yeah, I mean, what we said, Stefan, you have been in the community for, as a security MVP at least, for 17 years. And how important is community collaboration in cybersecurity, in your opinion? And can you share with us maybe an experience where community efforts made a real difference in solving a challenge, for example?
I mean, yeah, as you said, 17 years as an MVP. I mean, there's been award categories have been named a bit differently, but I mean, well, yeah, since security came out, I've been in that area. I mean, community to me is why I started in community, because I had a struggle myself with some of the technology areas. Okay, I needed to find peers I could learn from, and that's kind of what I started on IRC, or the Internet Relay Chat, for those who are not know what IRC is. So it's a chat channel where we were sharing insights and lessons learned on how things were done. In that case, this was around hacking, how to break into stuff. That's always cool when you're 16 or 15 and wanting to learn more about that. But then I moved over to the defensive side more, and then it's kind of, okay, this is really tough. If I've been playing for this for 40 hours to learn myself, and maybe I can do something to accelerate someone else to not have to go through this pain. So that's kind of when I started to reply in news groups and then arranging this user group meeting, sharing insights, having other people share their insights, coming together. And I think that is, no matter what technology area, if you can come together, you can overcome anything. I mean, you can overcome all the hurdles. You can do things much quicker. You don't have to have that pain on your own. And now with technology changing so rapidly, it's really hard to keep up. Then you can actually use the community as well to keep up and not to fall into the same pitfalls or bang your head against the wall like everyone else has done. So that is something that is very, very important when it comes to the community. And the more you give, the more you get back. So that is also a thing. You can be there and listen, but if you give, then you're going to get a lot back. So that is something just to send to everyone. If you're sharing, people will share back. You will get a lot of appreciation back in general. Things we've achieved together in the community, I mean, there are various things. Cybersecurity-wise now, I think sharing queries or detection queries is the most powerful thing now, because detection engineering takes effort, it takes time, and everything we're trying to share is to keep everyone better protected, and we're doing that cross team, cross company. I mean, there's no, we're doing that across all of Europe through security MVPs and people you know online. I mean, happy to give away what we've learned for free. I mean, it's for a better Europe, for a better world. So I think sharing those queries or detections and threat signals where we can share, I think that is the most powerful thing where communities coming together now. Just look at all the repos out there with detection queries from various people out there. And I mean, everyone's helping each other to improve them and sending feedback to each other. So I think that's the most powerful thing at the moment. Probably going to see a lot of AI agents coming around now, helping when AI is hitting. So I would say that at the moment that is giving most impact. I can probably shout out a few names out there who are really good at it, but I'm going to not do that because then I'm probably going to miss someone. So there's so many people out there doing good stuff right now. So that is
I think the great thing is everybody's doing it on its own time and speed and way and has its own public. Yeah. And that's, I think, the most impactful one. And looking to the Microsoft MVP program, we had also Katie and Pablo in our first season. They talk a lot about the customer connection program and what they have done by bringing the customer to the product team with the technical people together. And how do you, if you focus on that, how do you see Microsoft MVP community helping driving innovation and knowledge across the security as well? Is that similar? What can we do better? What shouldn't we do?
What I think is important here is that you need to be honest. You need to be, if something is not good, feel free to say it. Don't be just saying, oh, this is great. Tell them what can be done better. I think that is important for everyone. The MVP program have shifted over the years. Microsoft have shifted over the years. I mean, I've seen a lot of things over the last 17 years for sure. It's great that customer feedback is impacting, but I would say MVPs are also customer feedback. I mean, either we have one customer or we have several customers behind us. And sometimes we can be that filter to bring in the right, what's actually the most, gives the most value. So I think that's also a responsibility as an MVP, that we actually bring up the right things and not something that is just cool. It needs also gives to be value. So, I mean, sometimes we are stuck in technology space and it would be great to have that, but what value does it bring? So it's something we need to look at ourselves as well when we provide the feedback. But I think we are normally highly respected, highly knowledgeable. So it's easy to have the discussions with the engineering for us and give them the technical insights. So that is something I find very valuable, having the discussions directly with the engineers, building the functionality. So that is something I really appreciate in the MVP program, to actually being able to improve the products when working with Microsoft, but also voicing customers or the community's voices what they're needing. And we usually run into those pain points when things we need to either we solve ourselves with script or something, maybe that can be built into the product instead to spare some time for some people.
Nice. To finish a bit up, also looking at the time, we're almost running a bit out of time already, because it's always fun to have these kind of conversations. But Stefan, if we look at working, having some time off, you enjoy padel, tennis, and traveling. How do these passions help you to recharge? And do you see any parallels between cybersecurity and sports strategy and that kind of stuff?
Padel tennis is like chess. I mean, you need to play out the threat actor on the other side of the net. So you have to win the battle. So it's kind of there are similarities on which card you're playing. It's like playing poker sometimes. It's very when I'm stressed, when I have a lot of things in my mind, I go to padel tennis, and that's when I only focus on what's happening inside of the cage, not everything else. So that is my re-energizer, gives me energy, definitely. And so that is, but as with me, as always, I go into something 110%. So sometimes I do things a bit too much. So I think I've taken all trainer courses in padel tennis and such like that. So I just need to tame myself more or less. But but then what I actually gain the most energy of is meeting other MVPs, being out presenting at community events and so on. Because that gives so much energy, getting feedback, getting someone who actually, I saw your session last time, I've done this and this now, and it's great. What tips do you have for me? And that is really energizing for me, at least. So that is,
And talking about padel, Defender XDR or a good game of padel tennis, what gets your heart racing more?
Defender. Sports is just something to control my passion for work. So that's I'm a technology geek, and Defender right now is at the heart of everything. So that's,
yeah, and talking about cybersecurity, traveling is one of the things you also like. What travel destination is still on your cybersecurity bucket list? Conference or no conference attached?
I'd like to go to Black Hat Asia, I think. I have never been to any security conference in Asia. So that's kind of on my nice bucket. I've been to DEF CONs and other in Vegas, and I'm pretty... Yeah, Vegas is nice as well, but Singapore, some conference, security conference there, meeting, seeing how that culture and how that community works would be nice. So,
yeah, nice.
That's my vote.
Yeah, nice. Any closing question for you, Bojan?
No, I think we had a lot, and it was a great conversation, deep conversation. Good to hear your... I hope that our listeners enjoyed it as well, Stefan. The hearing your vision on the future, the calmness that there is, because I think a lot of us fear a storm. And when I listen to you, I hear calmness and controlness and a vision for the future. So I hope that's also for our listeners. And thank you for having the time for us. So, Franz,
up to you. Thank you, guys.
That wraps up today's episode of Security MVP Insights. Stefan, many thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And sharing your expertise, real world experiences, and a bit of your passion for cybersecurity. Not only a bit, but and padel tennis too. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's discussion, be sure to subscribe to the YouTube or the podcast. And follow us on LinkedIn and X. Are we still on X? We need to be on Blue Sky as well. Yeah. We'll need to convert that. Stay updated and follow us on all the upcoming episodes with more amazing guests. We have a great season ahead, packed with insights, real stories, strategies you won't want to miss. I say for now, until next time, stay safe, stay sharp, and as always, stay secure. Talking security.